Chapter 10. The Sixth Army.
The following day was extremely busy. The dwarves threw themselves into the task of dismembering the dragon, chipping away at his breastplate and prying at his scales. It was slow going, and many fine blades were bent beyond repair in the attempt. There was no help for it. Smaug had been a creature of flesh and blood, and they could hardly leave his body to rot inside the mountain. Owen and Glowin, who had a keen interest in armor-smithing, salvaged as many intact scales as they could, though most chipped or cracked as they were pried off. It was ugly, filthy work, and Bella was happy to be left out of it. She, Bomber, Nori, and Ori spent the morning exploring some of the rooms that had not been too badly damaged by the dragon, and scavenging what comforts they could take back to the treasure hall. Most everything fabric was filthy and fallen to pieces, but some of the chairs were intact, and Belle had high hopes that some of the rooms further from the dragon's lair would be better preserved. After a few hours of exploring, they found a kitchen. It was worse than Belle had feared, sticky with dust and whatever remained of its long-ago stores. Happily, the plumbing still worked, and the thought of another cold supper was enough to get them scrubbing. In a short time, the room was clear of the worst of it, though Bella suspected the smell would linger. As they worked, Nori and Ori went to fetch the supplies from the treasure hall and find something to burn on the hearth. Thorin had told them to expect his cousin Dian, king of the dwarves of the Iron Hills, to arrive with fresh forces and supplies within the week, so Bella and Bomber were generous with the rations. They cooked up as much of a feast as they were able to, out of the salted fish and hard bread the people of Lake Town had given them, and Nori scrounged a few bottles of wine from somewhere, a filthy cellar, by the look of him and the bottles, and that evening they had quite a merry party.
"Three cheers for Dwalin Dragonslayer!"
Keeley shouted, lifting his drink into the air and only sloshing a bit of it onto his plate. The others cheered, stamping their feet and pounding on the table, except for Dwalin, who scowled and shook his head.
"Do not call me that," he said. "Thorin put the spear in my hand, and the hobbit guided my aim. The rest of you bought me the chance. I couldn't have done it alone." "It was your throw that downed him, and so you must suffer our praise,"
grinned Thorin, slapping him hard on the back.
"They will herald your deeds from here to the Blue Mountains, if I have my way." "Save me from the gratitude of princes,"
Dwalin groaned, slouching in his chair and looking towards his brother for help.
"What about Dwalin, King's Arm?"
Balin suggested, hiding a smug grin behind his hand.
"I like it,"
said Thorin, and the others chorused their approval. He raised his mug.
"To Dwalin, my arm and my right hand."
Everyone raised a cup, in spite of Dwalin's eye roll.
"If I hear so much as one verse of a ballad, you'll wish for death as quick as the dragons,"
he grumbled, emptying his drink in one swallow. The next day was as busy as the one before it. The dwarves split their time between seeing to the remains of the dragon and fortifying the mountain's gates, which had been badly damaged during Smaug's attack. The work started at sunup, and though Bella was ill-suited to help with either task, she made sure to have a hearty lunch waiting for them at midday.
"I'll help you with the cleanup, Belle," offered Feely afterwards, as she began to fill the sink with dishes.
"Would you? Only if you have the time, of course," she smiled. "It's been a bit lonely this morning, with everyone working so hard."
"It'll be better in a few days, when Dian arrives," he said, pumping water into the basin. "It'll bring dwarves enough to help, until our people come from the Blue Mountains. I can't wait for you to meet our mother."
"Do you think she'll..." Bella paused, searching for the right words. "Approve. Of me, I mean." Feely laughed.
"She can hardly disapprove, after all you've done."
"She will appreciate the grief you've caused me, if nothing else,"
said a voice from the doorway. Bella put her hands on her hips.
"Grief? You've got nerve, Thorin Oakenshield, accusing me of grieving you."
"Has something happened?" Feely asked, wiping his hands dry on his shirt. "Keely was to join you at the gates. Have you seen him?"
"All is well. I sent him ahead to deal with the others."
Thorin walked over to stand beside his nephew.
"I owe your sister a gift,"
he said, pressing a wrapped parcel into Feely's hands.
"This is the first installment."
"Perhaps," Feely said dismissively, as he opened the bundle. He nearly fumbled it when he saw what it contained, the cloth wrapping fluttering, forgotten, to the ground.
"Is this mithril?"
Feely gasped, unfurling a mail shirt that shone like reflected moonlight, and testing its strength between his fingers.
"It does not rival the Arkenstone,"
Thorn sat, brow raised.
"But it will do for a start. I forget that you have never seen it. You will have to supplement your training at the forge."
"You do nothing by halves, do you, Uncle?"
Feely laughed. "I was of a mind to refuse your gift, whatever it was, but I know when I'm beaten." He turned to Bella, who had stilled as soon as Thorn spoke of gift, her arms still piled with dishes.
"Sister, Thorin, son of Thrain, would give you a gift. Will you see it?"
Wordlessly, she set the plates back on the table and reached for the shirt, and Feely put it gently into her hand. It was ice cold, and made of tiny rings that draped like silk over her arm, and the weight of it startled her, so that she almost dropped it before she recovered herself.
"Oh,"
she said. "Well, very beautiful, certainly. Very, shiny. Thank you." She turned to Feely. "Did I do that right?"
Thorn doubled over, bracing his hands on his knees as he laughed.
"Bella, that is mithril, out of the mines of Moria," Feely said, pained. "Bright as silver, harder than steel. Back when it could be mined, it was worth 10 times its weight in gold. Now," he swallowed, "it is a kingly gift." Thorn plucked the shirt from her hands and draped it over her head.
"I've seen a burglar charge orcs and taunt dragons," he said, his voice still warm with humor. "No lesser metal would I trust with her safety."
"Fine, fine," she said, pushing her arms through the sleeves. "Go on and laugh. I'm sure I look quite ridiculous."
"That is not the word I would use."
Feely grinned, straightening her collar.
"It suits you."
He turned to Thorin for confirmation, but whatever he saw in his uncle's face made him step in front of Bella, frowning and unhappy.
"We're finished here," he snapped.
"Feely, what's wrong?" Bella asked, putting a hand on his elbow. "Has something upset you?"
"We are allowed some privacy now,"
Thorin said, keeping his eyes on his nephew.
"It is not within your purview to refuse."
Feely snorted and turned to Bella.
"I'll be just over there," he said, pointing toward the doorway, "within shouting distance." "Feely," she said, scandalized, as he turned back to glare at Thorin, who looked smug.
"I wouldn't be so quick to taunt me, Uncle," Feely grumbled as he walked away. "The matter's not yet settled, and I can still make things difficult if I choose."
Thorin ignored him, turning to face Bella and looking at her as if she were the only other soul in the mountain.
"I've been waiting to talk to you,"
he said quietly. "Must we keep exchanging gifts if we want a few moments alone?" Bella complained, stepping forward until she stood before him. Thorin laughed.
"I'm afraid so. Oh, it does not bother me. There is much that I would give you, now that I am able."
Bella looked at her feet, blushing, and he tipped her chin up with a finger.
"What's this?"
He smiled at her.
"You are not so bashful when you face down the dragon. Am I more fearsome?"
"No," she admitted. "And at the same time, yes. But if you had seen me with the dragon, you would know that I was shaking apart with nerves."
"I heard it all,"
he said.
"We're at your heels, waiting at the mouth of the tunnel. I did not trust your ring to shield you."
His face grew serious.
"When the dragon spoke, it was as if I were watching the mountain fall again. I could barely make out his words over the roaring in my ears. Why did you not retreat?"
"What good would it have done?" Bella asked, puzzled. She reached up, covering his frown with the tips of her fingers. "He would have killed us all, or starved us, if his flames could not reach." She grimaced. "Did you really hear everything?" She lowered her hand, and he took it in both of his.
"I heard you taunt the dragon, though he would have killed you,
Thorin said softly. She shook her head. He was going for the tunnel. He knew you were there. There was no choice. He stood there, watching her quietly, with a look in his eyes she could not begin to decipher. What are you thinking? She asked, uncomfortable. The corners of his lips turned up.
It is foolish, and I would rather not say.
She brightened. Oh, come now. You could deal with looking foolish a bit more often. You're far too dignified.
Another time,
he said, tucking one of her braids behind her ear.
Uncle!
Feely called, rushing into the room with Keely right behind him.
So soon, Feely.
Thorin sighed, taking a step back. Bella frowned, and he shrugged at her regretfully.
It isn't that, Keely said, panting out of breath. There are men at the gate, and elves, hundreds of them.
All of the dwarves rushed out to the wide terrace that overlooked the gate of the mountain, with Bella following as quickly as she could. She had to stand on her toes to see what lay beyond the low wall, until Keely quietly gave her a bit of a boost. Spread out on the plains around the mountain was a great company of elves, armed with bows and spears and standing at attention behind their king, who rode before them on a great elk. At his side was the master of Lake Town, flanked by guards and riding at the head of his own men, though they were fewer in number.
Thorin Oakenshield!
One of the master's guards rode forward, a tall man with dark hair, who carried a bow larger than Bella herself.
My heart is glad to see you restored to your rightful homeland, but why have you shut your gates against us? Are the men of the lake your enemies?
I have no quarrel with Lake Town, Thorin said, or hadn't, until I was interrupted by your army at my door. What is your purpose here?
I am Bard, the man called, heir of Geryon of Dale, your ally, and I serve as guard to the master of Lake Town. Will you not come down and speak with him?
I will not,
Thorin said, though he had sucked in a breath at the name of Geryon.
While you keep company with the king of Mirkwood, who has used us ill. Why have you come, Thranduil?
The elf rode forward, inclining his head in Thorin's direction. 2 nights ago, the ground shook, and smoke faded from the base of the mountain, he said levelly. The elves were not the only ones to notice these signs. Word has spread by now of the dragon's death, though it was not said that any had survived his passing.
I see, said Thorin. Your purpose is clear to me now. You thought the mountain and all its treasure unguarded and free for the taking, and rode out with all speed.
He took a step back from the wall, his hands balled into fists at his sides.
I must disappoint you,
he continued, forcing his fingers open and squaring his shoulders.
Durin's line once again sits on the throne of Erebor, and the delegates of Mirkwood are unwelcome in my halls.
Do not be so quick to refuse our friendship. You have taken back the mountain, Thranduil called, smiling slightly below blank eyes. But can you hold it? 13 dwarves I kept in my dungeons, and no more have traversed the greenwood. Hardly an army.
We're dwarves enough to slay dragons,
Thorin shot back, motioning at Healy to draw his bow.
There is no need to mention armies, Bard called, raising a hand for quiet.
Thranduil looked at him askance, and even Thorin paused.
We have not come to challenge your kingship, but to see if the rumors were true.
And now you have seen they are,
Thorin said, still furious.
So I ask again, what is your purpose?
The master moved his horse forward, past Bard.
Have you so soon forgotten the people of Lake Town?
He yelled.
Who supported your quest with food and shelter?
I have not, said Thorin. Nor do I leave my debts unpaid, though some would consider the reestablishment of Erebor's trade more than enough recompense. But if you wish, I will throw down coin enough for our supplies and a few nights of lodging.
There is also the matter of the wealth of Dale,
the master continued. stolen by Smaug when he took the mountain.
The dwarves burst into an angry furor, but Thorn remained silent, staring steadily at the man until the master looked uncomfortable.
"Well, what say you?"
he said, stepping back between his guards.
"I say that you are a fool,"
Thorn said softly, and everyone quieted to hear his words.
"To stand as an army before my gate and demand Dale's legacy. Profit from an alliance with Erebor would make such wealth into a pittance."
"If it is so little to you," the master rallied, "then send it down, and we may discuss more pleasant matters."
"Leave my mountain,"
Thorin ordered, and the other dwarves tensed at his tone, their hands moving towards their weapons.
"Go now, and do not return unless it is without elves or armies. Then perhaps we will discuss what you are owed."
He turned away from the wall and walked into the mountain without waiting for a reply. The others followed, but Bella took one last look over the wall. The master was pointing at Bard, and from the look on his face, whatever he was saying was nothing terribly friendly. Bard bore it stoically, and Thranduil watched with either disdain or amusement. Bella could not tell. Word came after supper the next day that Dain and the dwarves of the Iron Hills had arrived, but were prevented from approaching the mountain by the master of Lake Town and his men. This news sent Thorin shaking with rage to the wall, almost faster than Bella and the others could follow.
"You dare!"
he bellowed to the men and elves, who were still camped at the foot of the mountain.
"You dare threaten my kin at the gates of my own kingdom!"
"It seemed prudent,"
called the master, whom Bella noticed the elves were giving rather a wide berth.
"Who knows how long it may take you to see to our claim, once you are well supplied and busy with rebuilding."
"I will see to your claim now,"
Thorn said, his hand closing around the hilt of his sword.
"Not just yet, Master Oakenshield,"
cried a voice from behind the master.
"I would speak with you first."
"Gandalf!"
Bella cried, dizzy with her relief. "You've returned! Someone lower a rope for him!"
"No need,"
the wizard called, stepping out from a group of elves.
"I am quite comfortable down here. Will the rest of you join me?"
Thorin scowled.
"We will not. Long enough we have waited to reclaim these halls. If you would seek counsel with me, it will be in my own kingdom."
"I am not here only on your behalf,"
Gandalf answered, gesturing with the staff toward the leaders of Lake Town and Mirkwood.
"But I do bring news from the west. A legion of orc riders approaches, led by Azog. They are great in number. No single army could stand against them."
"Thorin,"
Bard called,
"your kin stand ready, 500 strong. We would fight at their side and drive the orcs back to the Misty Mountains."
"Listen to Bard,"
Gandalf advised.
"It will take the combined forces of dwarves, elves, and men to counter this threat. Will you not come down and talk it over?"
"Let my kin through,"
Thorin said, through gritted teeth.
"As a show of good faith, let them pass my gates unmolested, and I will come and speak with you."
Bella gaped at him, shocked at this concession.
"You need not look at me like that,"
he said, low enough so that only she and the rest of the company heard him.
"I am not so stubborn as to be blind to our current danger. I will meet them halfway."
"Now," said the master, moving in front of Bard, "you are in no position to give orders. Until we have agreed on the distribution of the treasure, we will hold the gate."
Thorin growled, taking a step away from the wall.
"They will not be reasonable,"
he said, and Balin stepped forward.
"My lord Thranduil,"
he said, as Dwalin held Thorin back by an arm,
"we were allies once, though we have gotten off to a poor start. The orcs must have come through our kingdom. The road around Mirkwood is too long for them to have done otherwise. Our forces could help you drive them back. Is that not more valuable to you than dragon treasure?"
"The elves are not here to make war on the dwarves for gold," said Thranduil.
nor do we rally to the defense of one who calls us his enemy.
Go, then, Thorn said. Return to your woods, and take the men of the lake with you. We dwarves will defend our own, as we have always done.
Not yet, said Thranduil. I would not disregard the counsel of Mithrandir so lightly. We will tarry yet a while.
You may tarry until there is naught but your bones on the mountainside,
Thorin said coldly, before he turned and walked back into the mountain.
Thorin, Bella said, chasing after him, we cannot leave it like that. We must make them see reason.
Reason?
Thorin exclaimed, stopping suddenly in the hallway.
Reason? They have threatened my kin. That is reason enough for war. And even then I gave them a chance for diplomacy. Would you have me concede to their every demand?
Of course not, she replied, stumbling to a stop before she crashed into him. But we are running out of time. I'm sure Gandalf would not be here if the situation were not very serious.
I think Thranduil would meet with you, Balin said, as the other dwarves caught up to them. He does not seem so interested in the gold. But you cannot go down without dealing with the master, and the master will not bend.
Let's try again, Bella pleaded. I am sure that Thranduil and Gandalf can persuade him.
I vote no, growled Dwalin. Thorin has been more than fair. They must let Dain through, if they want our help against the orcs.
I agree, said Beaufort. They're between us and them, after all. Who's to say that we cannot withstand the orcs, once the elves and men thin them out?
The wizard doesn't seem to think so, said Glaun, and I reckon he's seen many a great battle in his day. I'm not saying we give in to the master, he said, raising his hands. Only what I think of your strategy.
You heard Gandalf, Bella said. It will take all our combined forces to withstand the orcs. The men will not see sense, and the elves will not bestir themselves to make them. Therefore it falls to us to do what needs doing.
And what is that?
Asked Thorin.
Suppose I give the man the treasure he asks for. Do you think that is where it will end?
He laughed, bitterly.
No, I know his kind. He will never be satisfied. I will hear no more.
Balin, my contract, please. Bella said, holding out a hand. He passed it over, and she shoved it into Thorin's chest, crumpling the paper.
Show me, she demanded. Show me where it says I may not question you.
He pushed her hand aside.
What would you have me do?
He asked, his voice low and rough.
Meet their demands. By their aid, they keep my kin from the mountain.
I know that, Bella yelled. They're behaving horribly, and the elves don't deserve so much as a brass button. But there's a greater threat coming, and we need their help.
I will not meet with them, not while they sit armed outside my gates,
Thorin said, with finality.
You cannot say the men have no claim,
Bella said, trying one last argument.
I never said that,
Thorin said.
If Geryon's heir came to talk of Dale, I would listen. If Laketown asked for reparations for their hospitality, I would reward them generously. But no one has come to talk, and they have not asked. They camp on our doorstep, wielding swords and making threats, and I will not bow to it. We have our kingdom back, our stronghold. No dwarf will bend to the whim of men and elves. Not while I rule here.
Bella looked down at her contract, unclenching her fist and smoothing out its creases. She folded it neatly and stowed it in her pocket before looking up at Thorin, who watched her with dark eyes. If a dwarf may not bend, she said at last, a hobbit will. Let me go and speak with them.
Never,
he growled, taking a step away from her. He turned to look at the others.
Go. I would speak with Miss Baggins.
She gasped, wounded at his use of the honorific, and the other dwarves filed out as she blinked back tears. After a moment, only Feline Keely remained, looking mutinous.
I speak not as your uncle, but as your king,
Thorin growled.
go. We will be done shortly.
Feely looked at Keeley, who hesitated for a long moment, then nodded. They walked away slowly, and Bella knew they would not go further than one step out the door.
"You must think me a poor king indeed,"
Thorne said when they were gone.
"If you imagine I would allow you to do such a thing, they would keep you, no doubt in hope of ransom, and I would pay it."
His hand started toward her, but dropped back against his side.
"If they had you, they could demand anything that was mine to give."
"Thorne, no," she said, shocked. "I cannot believe they would do that. Gandalf would never allow it."
"Gandalf."
He laughed humorlessly.
"He has his own interests, which he plays very close to the vest. Where was he when we were imprisoned, when we faced the dragon?"
"He has been a good friend to us," Bella said, lowering her eyes. "And he put me in your path, so I cannot think ill of him. Let me go down. I will make them see reason." Thorne shook his head, his face blank.
"No, I have made my conditions plain. They will speak with me as allies, or not at all."
And with that, he turned away. Her vision blurred as she stumbled from the room, straight into Feely. "Belle," he said, lifting her off her feet into an embrace. "What happened?" "He will not change his mind," she whispered, pressing her face into his shoulder.
"And I worry we will die of it."
"He isn't wrong, though," Keeley said, as Feely set her back on her feet. "If we give in now, what's to keep them from demanding gold for everything? You can't count on friends you pay for." "That's a problem for the future," Feely argued. "The orcs are a problem now." "You cannot want to give those thrice damned elves anything," Keeley protested. "Or that lake man, either. He has a slimy feel about him." "Of course I don't," Feely sighed. "This is a useless debate, anyway. Thorne has decided, and he is the king." "Hobbits do not have kings," Bella said grimly. "And I can't sit here and do nothing." Feely shook his head. "Our uncle is proud," he said, "but he has led our people well for many years. He will see what's right." Bella leaned her head on Keeley's shoulder, closing her eyes. "We should get some rest," she said. "Perhaps things will look brighter in the morning." Bella lay quietly in the dark for a long time, waiting for Feely and Keeley to fall asleep. They tossed and turned for hours, and she nearly wept when their breathing finally slowed, evening out the rise and fall of their chests. She rose silently, gathering her cloak and sword, and after a moment's thought, put on her mail shirt under her clothes. It was cold against her skin, and she shivered as she crept as softly as she could to the outer wall.
"Bella," Bomber greeted her from his seat by the archway. "What brings you out so late?"
"Well," she said, startled, having forgotten that Thorne had set a watch. She looked frantically at the rope, debating whether or not she could lower it and climb down before he alerted the others. He followed her gaze, then sighed. They stood there for a long moment, and Bella could see deliberation on his face.
"Well, you're just in time to do me a favor, as it happens," he said in the end.
"I need to go in and talk to Beaufort. Think you could keep an eye on things out here for a bit?" She blinked, confused. Surely it was obvious what she was planning. But he nodded at her, slow and knowing, and then she understood. "Of course," she murmured, her hands fidgeting with the hem of her cloak. "Take all the time you need." "Thank you," he said solemnly, as he headed into the mountain.
"As you know, my kin and I are always at your service."
She made her way down to the camp with little difficulty, slipping invisibly past the guards all the way to the entrance of a large tent, where the men of the lake were taking counsel with Gandalf and the elves. She removed her ring before approaching, and was quickly apprehended by the sentries.
"I beg your pardon,"
she said, pulling uselessly in their grip. "This is quite unnecessary. I've come to talk."
"Bella Baggins,"
Gandalf said warmly, as he stepped out of the tent.
"I thought I heard your voice. Has Thorin seen sense at last?"
"No," she sighed. "He doesn't know I'm here." Gandalf frowned.
"You'd better come and sit down,"
he said, leading her inside. The space was set up with a large table, around which sat the Master of Lake Town, Bard, and Thranduil, behind whom stood another pale-haired elf.
"This is Bella Baggins,"
Gandalf said to them, gesturing toward her.
"Bella, I believe you know the men of Lake Town. This is Thranduil, King of the Greenwood, and his son Legolas."
They nodded at her, and she curtsied, trying not to let on that she had seen the king before.
"Sit down,"
Gandalf said, pulling out a chair,
"and let us hear what you have come to say."
The chair was too tall for her, and she had to jump a bit to reach the seat. Even sitting, the table came up against her chest. She tried to bear it with dignity. "My lords," she said, lacing her fingers in front of her, "there's an army on the way. They aim to take the mountain. And not only do you leave the dwarves without allies, you will not let their reinforcements pass. Can we not put aside our differences until the threat is over? Are you so keen to have orcs for neighbors?"
"It is the dwarves who will not meet with us,"
the master complained.
"And why should they?"
Anger flared up in Bella's chest, and she glared at him. "The dragon was barely cold before you showed up, in force. You have kept them from their kin and threatened them. Withdraw your men, or let the other dwarves through, and Thorin will talk with you. I know he will."
"Are you so sure of that?"
Gandalf asked, exchanging a look with Thranduil.
"Is it the soldiers that hold Thorin back, or the loss of the treasure? I'd feared the gold madness of Thror would overcome him if he retook the mountain."
"Gold madness?" Bella spluttered. "Thorin isn't gold mad, Gandalf. He's furious at all these elves and men camped on his doorstep and spouting threats. Anyone would be."
"Really?"
Gandalf raised his brows.
"You are certain of this?"
"I myself put the Arkenstone into his hand, and he swore to me that he did not feel its pull,"
she said firmly.
"There is no madness here. Let the dwarves from the Iron Hills through, and you will see."
"That we will not do,"
said the master.
"None will pass until the dwarves give us what we are owed."
"Owed?"
Bella asked, coldly.
"Did you slay the dragon?"
He eyed her appraisingly.
"Perhaps it does not matter,"
he said, suddenly more cheerful.
"The dwarf king dotes on this little creature. He might offer much
in exchange for her safe return."
"That,"
Gandalf said darkly,
"I will not allow."
Bard shook his head.
"The halfling came here in good faith. I will have no part in her kidnap."
Thranduil said nothing, but he looked at the master coldly, and his son put a hand on the hunting knife at his belt.
"As you say."
The master shrugged, his eyes still on Bella.
"Oh, I do not see what else we might get out of her. She does not speak for the dwarves."
"And you wonder why they hesitate to bargain with you,"
Bella cried, pushing away from the table.
You foul thing! You should be grateful I have come, for Thorin would give you nothing, and rightly so."
"I rule Lake Town, whose citizens are the heirs of Dale,"
the master said, puffing at his chest.
"It is right that the city's wealth should come to me, however the means."
"Is it?"
wondered Gandalf.
"Dale's king has an heir, and it is not you."
The master narrowed his eyes at Gandalf.
"There is no Dale. That city is dead and burned."
"It could be rebuilt,"
Gandalf said, pulling out his pipe.
"There's gold enough for such a project."
He turned to Bard.
"What do you think?"
The man looked thoughtful, and Bella was impressed at how self-possessed he was in such mighty company.
The people in Lake Town have long hoped for the kingdom under the mountain to rise again, that Dale might follow.
Bard said,
I would not see that dream die now, so close to fruition.
He has no authority here,
the master hissed. Bard stared at him levelly.
I have the loyalty of my men, who followed me here, and not you, he said. That is all the authority I require.
Then it's settled, Bella said to the master. You have both shown your quality, and I find yours wanting. Bard may speak for your people, if we strike a bargain.
I see.
The master stood up from the table, knocking his chair to the floor. He turned, pointing a finger at Bard.
You are delighted by this, no doubt. You have long been jealous of my position in town, which you feel should rightfully have come to you.
I have served you well for many years, Bard said calmly, and never moved to usurp you, though I could have, and perhaps should have. Go now, and let me try to salvage this disaster, before the orcs slaughter us all as we squabble.
The master laughed, and his fury calmed something inside of Bella. She turned to Thranduil, looking at him thoughtfully. Though I cannot approve of their methods, I believe the men do have some claim to a share of Smaug's hoard, she said. The elves are another matter.
You are a strange creature, to speak so, the king said, raising a brow at her. We are not your enemy, nor are we enemies of the dwarves.
Truly, Legolas interrupted. We had thought your company fell with the dragon. I cannot fathom how you slew him.
Together, Bella said crisply. The others said nothing, waiting for her to elaborate. When it became apparent that no more was forthcoming, the prince shook his head slightly and went on.
You said King Thorin might make peace with the men. Do you believe he will speak with us if we withdraw our forces?
Bella flushed. That I cannot say. Imprisoning him on his way to the mountain was not a good first step toward diplomacy.
Thranduil narrowed his eyes. We have offered our hand in friendship to the dwarves, and they have rejected it. Our alliance with his forefathers will buy Thorin Oakenshield only so much.
Oh, yes, by all means, let us discuss this friendship, Bella said. And what a blessing it was to them when Smaug drove them from their homeland.
You saw the dragon, Thranduil said coldly, and the results of his machinations. Not even with all of my people could we have retaken the mountain. Should I have spent their lives in the attempt?
You should have done something,
Bella said, bringing a hand down hard against the table. You were there when the dwarves fled the dragon's fire. What comfort did you offer their widows and orphans? Did you provide them shelter, solace, so much as a crust of bread? I have seen with my own eyes the hospitality of her halls, my lord, so do not speak to me of your friendship. Thranduil stood, cloak billowing out behind him, and left the tent without a word. His son stayed behind, staring down at his own clasped hands. Bella turned to Bard. I have offended everyone else, so I suppose it is your turn now. She pulled her contract from her pocket, pressing it flat on the table and sliding it over to him. As it says here, I am entitled to 1/14 of the profits of our venture. You have not seen the dragon's hoard, so I will tell you, that is wealth beyond calculating. She leaned back in her chair as he glanced over the document.
What do you propose?
He said when he was satisfied.
I will sign over my share to you, Bard, heir of Geryon, to stand for the wealth of Dale. You may oversee its disbursement between the elves, who are your allies, and the reconstruction of your city,
she said, savoring his shocked expression.
At this, the elf prince looked up, meeting Bard's eyes across the table.
And in exchange? Bard prompted, after a moment.
Your men and the elves will stay and fight with the dwarves against the orcs, Bella said. Further, you will guarantee the safety of Thorin Oakenshield and his heirs and all the dwarves in his company.
Bard laughed.
You ask the impossible. Fight at his side. That I will do.
My men will follow me over the master, for we fight for Dale, and I could broker a deal with the Elven King to help us, for he is not so unfriendly as you think. But you cannot ask me to promise the safety of so many. Such a thing cannot be done.
I do ask it, Bella said, firmly. Erebor is only a mountain, and its treasure a pile of metal and rocks. The lives of my friends are the only things of any value to me whatsoever. If you feel you cannot defend 13 dwarves with 2 armies at your disposal, tell me now, and I will find someone who can.
Bard looked toward Legolas, who met his gaze steadily. We are allies, the elf said. Whatever bargain you make here, the Greenwood will uphold it. He turned to Bella. My father has lived long and has seen much that lies heavy on his heart. Now our kingdom slips into shadow, and we cannot hold the darkness at bay. Do not think so ill of him.
Protect my friends, she replied, and I will sing his praises from the mountain top.
She turned back to Bard.
Well?
The chance to rebuild Dale is not one I will ignore lightly, Bard said, standing. I accept your bargain. Legolas, will you inform your father? I must speak with Gandalf.
The elf nodded. I will.
Return to the mountain, Miss Baggins,
Bard said, taking her contract and stowing it in his vest.
I will escort you to the wall. We will defend your people, or fall in the attempt. My word on it.
It was too much to hope that her absence would not be noted. Bella! Feely shouted, as soon as she was within sight. Get back up here this instant! Feely took hold of the rope, which was still laying over the wall, but Thorin pulled him back onto the terrace.
What have you done?
Thorin asked slowly, as if Bella had pierced him to the heart.
You should thank the halfling,
Bard called up. She has settled our dispute. Our forces are with you, and we have sent runners to call for your kin. Already they approach the mountain. Thorin ignored him, staring at Bella with a mixture of shock and betrayal.
You thought I could not protect you,
he said dully.
You preferred to trust your life to the elves and men.
No! She cried, running to the base of the wall. No, that is not it at all! It is not my own life that concerns me! He held up a hand.
Enough. Stay down there with your friends, if they bring you such comfort. I will trouble you no further.
He turned, walking quickly out of her sight, and though she had expected his anger, she was staggered by the pain it caused. Feely and Keely looked at each other, and then Keely went for the rope again, his brother at his heels.
Stop! Bella yelled at them. Stay up there with Thorin and the others. Either you're coming up or we're coming down.
Keely shouted back, throwing a leg over the wall.
No, I mean it. You must trust me. Stay with your uncle, she said, and Feely threw his hands into the air.
We do trust you. It's these armies we're worried about, he said, but he pulled Keely behind the wall again. Bella waved them back.
Everything will be fine, but do not leave Thorin. Promise me.
Feely narrowed his eyes. For the moment, he called, tugging his brother away by the hood.
Does this change the terms of our bargain?
Bard asked her, as Feely and Keely disappeared inside the mountain. She took a moment to steady herself, then drew herself up to her full height before answering. No, it stands.
Halfling,
Thranduil called as he approached them, Legolas at his side. It will not be long now ere our foes arrive. Stay close, and my guard and I will watch over you. She shook her head.
I thank you, but no, I have a sword and must do my bit to help.
He smiled, ever so slightly, the most genuine expression Bella had ever seen on his face.
I had not taken you for a warrior.
I may surprise you yet, she said, forcing a grin as she slipped on the ring and vanished from their midst.
The battle started before midday, and began well for the elves and men, who had learned the details of the orcs' approach from Gandalf and the ravens. Their advantage did not last long, however. The enemy had come in force, and it was only the ferocity of the dwarves from the Iron Hills that kept their allies from being driven back against the mountain. Bella made her way up its slopes, near enough to the gate to see Thorin and company burst out of Erebor, weapons flashing in the sunlight. Bella watched, terrified yet hopeful, as two garrisons of elves and men converged on the dwarves, shielding them from a sea of enemies as they cut their way towards Azog. She could not help the scream that escaped as one of the orcs broke through the line of elves, charging towards Thorin with his sword raised. He died before he could get within swinging distance, an arrow in his chest and an axe through his skull. Bella cursed herself for making a sound, as several of the dwarves were looking towards the place where she stood on the mountainside, and she was grateful she had already put on the ring. Harsh laughter from behind her made her turn around, and she was horrified to see that a troop of orcs had climbed around the side of the mountain and were moving in on the dwarves from the rear. Bella nearly shrieked again when the one nearest her drew a bow and a terrible barbed arrow. She ran towards him, hand on her sword, but she was too far away and knew she would not be in time to prevent his shot. Just as he was about to fire, a squadron of elves charged in from the other direction, throwing off his aim and engaging him and the rest of the orcs in combat. She took a moment to bless Thranduil, and her relief distracted her enough that she failed to dodge out of the path of a fleeing orc. Brightness exploded behind her eyes as the edge of his shield connected with the back of her head. She staggered, going to her knees as the battle raged around her. She fell forward onto her hands and spent long moments raggedly forcing her breath in and out of her lungs. When the ground seemed firm again beneath her, she tried to rise, but dizziness dropped her into the dirt again. As slowly as she could, she began to crawl, dragging herself down the path off the mountain. After resting there for a few minutes, until she felt steady enough to stand, she took a hesitant step, and then another, and then stopped to lean against an outcropping of rocks. Her head burned, and she felt something wet on her neck that she had a bad feeling about. A familiar voice caught her attention, and she knew, even before she dragged herself around a turn in the path to see, that it was Fili, growling something fierce in Kudzul and fighting two orcs all alone. She held her breath as he dispatched them one after the other, his sword slashing gracefully through the air. "Fili!" she gasped, taking off the ring and making her way to his side. "Where's Keeley?" He actually laughed as he pulled his sword free of the corpse of a fallen orc. "Trapped at the others, behind your army of mercenaries." "Not worth half of what I paid for them, if they let you escape," Bella scowled. "I was very motivated," he said, grabbing her wrist and pulling her over to him. "Did you think I wouldn't come? You ought to have known I'd find you, wherever you wandered." He ran a hand over her hair, and his fingers came away red. "Belle," he said, eyes wide and horrified, "you're hurt." She batted at his hand. "It's nothing," she said as he turned her around. "Only feel a bit wobbly." "You're covered in blood down your back," he growled. "We need to get you out of here now." He wrapped an arm around her shoulders, guiding her along as they made their way towards the gates. Light and sound began to fade, and as they went she leaned more and more against Fili. "Almost there, Belle," he whispered, propelling them forward. "That's my girl. Hold on a bit longer. Don't you want to see Keeley? He'll be anxious to tell you all about his prowess in battle." "I need to sit, Fili," she slurred, sagging towards the ground. "Oh, Belle, no!" he cried. "I can't carry you now. I need my hands." She closed her eyes, slumping against his shoulder. "I can walk. Just give me a moment." He lowered her gently into a sitting position, then sheathed his swords. "Belle," he said, kneeling beside her and cupping her chin. "Open your eyes." She obeyed sluggishly, blinking until his face came into focus. "That's right. Look at me. I need you to stay awake, Namad, all right? I'm going to carry you, and you're going to stay awake and keep an eye out for enemies. Can you do that?" It seemed an impossible task, with her eyelids so heavy and her limbs weighed down with tiredness. "You go," she said. "Find Keeley. I'll put the ring on, and you can come and get me afterwards. When it's safe." "Never," he said sharply, giving her a little shake. "Leave you bleeding in this wretched place. Keeley would send me back with an arrow through my heart if I tried." He pulled her against his chest, wrapping an arm around her shoulders and another beneath her knees.
Besides, don't you remember our agreement? Together, Bell, or not at all. Suddenly, a heavy rock crashed into the ground beside them, sending a cloud of dust into the air. What's happening? She asked, dazed. Orcs on the mountainside! He yelled, lifting her into his arms and breaking into a run. They're coming! Keep your head down! Rocks showered the ground around them until she could barely see through all the dirt they kicked up. She heard a sickening crack, and Feely fell hard to his knees, then all the way forward onto the ground. Feely! Bella screamed, crawling to his side from where she'd fallen. She shook her head, forcing her vision clear. Orcs were streaming down the path, nearer and nearer, and she tried and failed to push herself to her feet. She grabbed Feely by the shoulder, shaking him as hard as she could. Please wake up, she begged, her chest burning with panic. Please, please. But his eyes remained stubbornly closed. All right, she sighed, blinking back tears and laying down on the ground beside him. That's all right. She reached into her pocket for the ring, drawing it out as steadily as she could with trembling hands. With all the strength she had left, she took Feely's hand in hers and forced the ring onto his smallest finger. He vanished, and she rolled onto her back to stare into the cloudless sky. The world dimmed, narrowing to a point of light directly before her, and as she fell into the dark pool of senselessness, the last thing she saw was a blur of green and gold and the flash of a silver blade.